नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 2, Prayers by the Demigods for Lord Krishna in the Womb, days text 23 and 24. So this 23 has no purport. What's been happening is Krishna has now appeared in the womb of Devaki, and Kamsa has figured that out. And and then he's deliberating. What should I do? He's thinking maybe he should kill Devaki now. But then he says, "No, that's not a good idea. It was bad for me," and so on. So here in text 23. Shukadeva Goswami said, deliberating in this way, Kamsa, although determined to continue in enmity toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead, refrained from the vicious killing of his sister. He decided to wait until the Lord was born and then to do what was needed. Kill him when he gets out. So here he is, he's aware that the Lord is in his sister's womb, and every day he's getting closer and closer. So now he's in a fearful mood, and this is being described now in text 24. Translation. While sitting on his throne, or in his sitting room, while lying on his bed, or indeed, while situated anywhere, and while eating, sleeping, or walking, Kamsa saw only his enemy, the Supreme Lord Rishikesh. In other words, by thinking of his all-pervading enemy, Kamsa became unfavorably Krishna conscious. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Rupa Goswami has described the finest pattern of a devotional service as anukuldyena krishnanu shilanam, or cultivating Krishna consciousness favorably. Kamsa, of course, was also Krishna conscious, but because he regarded Krishna as his enemy, even though he was fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, his Krishna consciousness was not favorable for his existence. Krishna consciousness, favorably cultivated, makes one completely happy. So much so that a Krishna conscious person does not consider kaivalya sukham, or merging into the existence of Krishna, to be a great gain. Kaivalyam narakayate. For a Krishna conscious person, even merging into the existence of Krishna or Brahman, as impersonalists aspire to do, is uncomfortable. Kaivalyam narakayate tridashapur akashapushpayate. Karmis hanker to be promoted to the heavenly planets, but a Krishna conscious person considers such promotion of will-o'-the-wisp good for nothing. Durdantendriya kalasarpa patali proktata tamstrayate. Yogis try to control their senses and thus become happy, but a Krishna conscious person neglects the methods of yoga. He is unconcerned with the greatest of enemies, the senses, which are compared to snakes. For a Krishna conscious person who is cultivating Krishna consciousness favorably, the happiness conceived by the karmis, gyanis, and yogis is treated as less than a fig. Kamsa, however, because of cultivating Krishna consciousness in a different way, that is, inimically, was uncomfortable in all the affairs of his life. Whether sitting, sleeping, walking, or eating, he was always in danger. This is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. A non-devotee or atheist also cultivates God consciousness by trying to avoid God in everything. For example, so-called scientists who want to create life by a combination of chemicals regard the external material elements as supreme. Such scientists do not like the idea that life is partial, such scientists do not like the idea that life is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. As clearly stated in Bhagavad Gita, mamaivam shojiva loke jiva bhutaha, the living entities do not arise from a combination of material elements such as earth, water, air and fire, but are separated portions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one can understand the position of the living entities as a separated portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by studying the nature of the living entity, one can understand the nature of the Supreme Godhead, since the living entity is a fragmental sample of the Godhead. But because atheists are not interested in God consciousness, they try to be happy by cultivating Krishna consciousness in various unfavorable ways. Although Kamsa was always absorbed in thoughts of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was not happy. A devotee, however, whether sitting on a throne or beneath a tree, is always happy. Srila Rupa Goswami resigned from office as a government minister to sit beneath a tree, yet he was happy. Tyaktva turnam shesha mandalapati shreinim sada tuchchavat, said Goswami Astika 4. He did not care for his comfortable position as minister. He was happy even beneath a tree in Vrindavan, favorably serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. For a non-devotee, the world is full of problems, whereas for a devotee, the entire world is full of happiness. Vishvam purna sukayate vidimahindradis chakitayate yat karuna kataksha vaibhavattam tat gauramaiva stumaha. That's from the Chaitanya Chandramata 95. This comfortable position of a devotee can be established by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, yasmin stito na dukena gurunapi vichalyate. It's Bhagavad Gita 6.22. Even when a devotee is superficially put into great difficulty, he's never disturbed. So, asina samvisham tishtam bhumjana Pariyatan Mahim Chintayana Vishikesham Apasyat Tanmayam Jagat. So this is describing the perverse Krishna consciousness of Kamsa. Krishna conscious because he is always thinking of Krishna. That's what it means to be Krishna conscious. Right? So he was always thinking of Krishna. So asina, whenever he was sitting down on his throne or in his sitting room, so while sitting, samvisham, when lying down, tishtan, or anywhere he happened to be, bhunjana, sleeping, while eating, pariyatan mahim, walking about, strolling about in the grounds, Chintayano Rishikesha. He was always meditating on Rishikesha. Apasya Tanmayam Jagat. In fact, he saw the whole world as nothing but him. That's what it says. Everywhere he looked, there he saw Krishna. So you may think, well, he was a devotee because he's always Krishna conscious. Not quite. So he quotes here, Anukulyena Krishnanushilanam. This is Rupa Goswami's definition of devotional service. Anukulyena Krishnanushilanam. So Krishna Anushilana means always cultivating a relationship to Krishna and service relationship to Krishna, but anukulyena, anukula means favorably. That is, being well disposed toward Krishna, thinking of Krishna in a friendly or favorable way. Well, and Prabhupada also uses favorably here. It means also favorable, in a way that's favorable to oneself also. So because Kamsa was thinking of Krishna in anger or hatred, inimically, therefore it's not considered a devotee. This is his brand of Krishna consciousness was perverse, but it was intense. It was very intense because is Krishna's going to come out and get him, and so he's terrified. He is obsessed with Krishna. So this is his obsession. So everywhere where he goes, he's fearful. Krishna is my enemy, and he's going to get me. And so he could not be happy. So this describes all his different situations. While he was sitting on his throne, while he was walking about, while he was lying down, while he was taking his meals, wherever he was uncomfortable and unhappy. So that's another meaning of unfavorable. It did not, his Krishna consciousness made him nervous. It made him, put him in distress. So that's how you can tell he was thinking of Krishna, but it put him in distress. Here throughout this purport, Prabhupada is quoting this famous verse by Prabodhananda Saraswati. From the Chaitanya Chandramata. Kaivalya narakayate tidashapura kashapushpayate durdantendriya kalasarpa patali proktata damstrayate vishwampurna sukayate vidimahindras chakitayate yatkarunakataksha vaibhavavatam tam gauram evastubaha. So this is Tam Gauram Eva Stuma. Let us glorify Lord Gauranga. Because Yat Karuna Kataksha Vaibhavatam, if one receives the Vaibhava, Vaibhava means power. If one receives the power, Karuna Kataksha, of given by his merciful sidelong glance of love. Kataksha means looking out of the corner of the eyes, Karuna Kataksha, with a glance of mercy. So Lord Chaitanya is described this way, and so is Lord Krishna, Karuna Kataksha, with this merciful sidelong glance of love. So if somehow or other, that merciful sidelong glance of love of Gauranga falls upon the devotee, then these are the consequences. That kaivalyam narakayate, that person, for that person, kaivalya means impersonal liberation. That's one name for impersonal liberation. Kaivalya means oneness. So that oneness of merging into Brahman, Prabhupada says in the purport, Kaivalya Sukham, the happiness of becoming one with Brahman, Narakayate, it becomes like hell. The thought of losing one's identity or merging into the Supreme, becoming liberated by becoming God, and having a dissolution of individuality, and therefore no Krishna. Krishna has disappeared from view. In fact, there's no such thing as a view anymore because there's no you to view. So that's Kaivalya, that's hell. So for this person, that's hell. Tridashapura Kashapushpayate, and the abodes of the demigods become like Akasha Pushpa, flowers in the sky. In the Vedas, non-existent things are described like that. Flowers in the sky. I think there's three examples, things that don't exist. Flowers that grow in the sky, Akasha Pushpa. I guess we would say, Akasha Pushpa. Flowers, they're like flowers growing in the sky. I mean, what are they? They're fantasy. What's the other thing? The horns of a rabbit. And the son of a barren woman. Those are non-existent things. The eggs of a horse. Yeah, horse eggs. Right, the eggs of a horse, another one. So Akasha Pushpa. And then Durdantendriya Kala Sarpa Patali. And the then it says the senses, Durdanta Tendriya, the unconquerable senses, which are like a nest of poisonous snakes, compared Proktaha Damstrayate. They all have their fangs extracted. So here's comparison. So there's three things are mentioned here. You may notice there's a pattern, a familiar pattern. The success of yoga, the success of karma, and the success of jnana are all derided. Of jnana, the success is kaivalya, it's hell. Of karma, following the karma kanda section of the Vedas, one is supposed to go to the heavenly cities of the demigods. That's phantasmagoria. And for yoga, to become immune from all the effects of the senses, well, that's already for the devotee who has achieved this Karuna Kataksha of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Those fearful senses, which are like venomous serpents, they're all defanged. So that's, first of all, automatically, whatever achievement is there, the success of yoga or karma or jnana, that's already there. And so therefore, for the devotee, Vishram Purna Sukhayate, the whole universe has become full of joy. So here, the Vishwam, it means this material universe, which is a place of Dukalayam Ashasvatam. It's temporary and miserable, but for the devotee who's actually serving Krishna, Vishwam, Purna Sukhayate, has become full of Purna Sukha, full of happiness. Vidhi Mahindras Cha Kutayate, and positions, Vidhi means Brahma, Lord Brahma, Mahindra, Lord Indra, and so on. All of those people, big persons, become like Kitayate, like little bugs, little insignificant, small crawling things, the biggest. Persons become like small crawling things, the insignificant, their positions. So that's all consequence upon. So Prabhupada quotes this verse to show that Vishwam Apurna Sukhayate,
this is devotional service. And so that one who is a devotee is comfortable everywhere. Vishwapurna Sukhayate. By comfortable he means always joyful. So wherever Kamsa's Krishna consciousness meant that no matter what he did, he was unhappy. He could sit down to the, if you're terrified, you can sit down to the biggest banquet and you can't eat. You can sit on a throne like a king and you're restless. You can go into, walk through beautiful pleasure gardens and you're miserable. So no matter what he did, he was nervous and restless and upset because he had enmity toward Krishna. So his unfavorable Krishna consciousness just made him miserable. Even though on Tanmaya Jagat he saw Krishna everywhere. Tanmaya Jagat, he saw Krishna everywhere. But for a devotee who sees Krishna everywhere also, but is anukulyena, is favorable toward Krishna, then he sees, he's happy everywhere. So happy that liberation and so on are not very important to him. And, so these are, this is the position of Krishna consciousness. One is always in a position of rejoicing. That's what yasmin stito nudukena gurunapi vichalyate. In that state one enjoys state of Krishna consciousness, samadhi, one enjoys transcendental happiness through transcendental senses and is not disturbed even in the midst of greatest difficulty. So all the huge difficulties of the material world, which are so disturbing to the materialistic persons, do not really, are only a superficial problem for devotees. So that's his, Prabhupada's point about real Krishna consciousness, that it brings this happiness. So Kamsa in a way is Krishna conscious, but it's unfavorable. It's not devotional service, and so not favorable toward Krishna, and therefore not really good for him either. He does not have that characteristic ease that follows upon devotional service. One can be at ease even in the material world. Vishwa purna sukhayate. Why? Because actually I'm not affected by all the changes and difficulties of material existence. A devotee is one who has no longer pinned his hopes on anything material. Those people who have pinned their hopes on material things are doomed to suffer horribly. But a devotee doesn't. He sees that in the material world everything is hopeless, so it's not a place to put any hopes. But the deluding energy is so great that people are always putting their hopes and investing all their energies into something material and temporary. So naturally they're always in anxiety. So the devotee has withdrawn from that enterprise and has developed Krishna consciousness, so no problems from there. So the material world doesn't really... And he sees everything in relationship to Krishna. This is Krishna's material world. It bears his stamp, so it's not a distressing place for him anymore. Here Prabhupada also makes another point in this verse that is interesting. Atheists are also, in a way, God-conscious, trying to avoid God in everything. So this you also see, especially you're talking about people like material scientists who are straining so hard to figure out how we can have or make a coherent picture of the world without recourse
to God or an absolute truth. That's their project. So in a sense, they're God conscious. But they want to see, how can we have a world without God that makes sense? So they're always thinking of God. So sometimes when you read the works of some of these people, especially militant atheistic people, sometimes they think as much about God as a devotee, but they're always just trying to say there is no God, or God is gone, or so the God is a big problem for them. How to get rid of him? How to write him out of the universe? How can we say? What they have to do actually is try to say that there is no absolute truth. That is to say, there is everything here, but it comes from nothing. That means they're trying to say that God is nothing. Take him and reduce him down to as little as you can get, which is zero. Then now, can we... very uncomfortable, the idea that the world comes from... Why should they be uncomfortable with this idea? Why should the idea of God make them so nervous and distressed? I mean, it's not like it's a conclusion that I've studied everything scientifically and I see there is no God. It's the beginning. Let us say there is no God and I'll make sense of everything that way. Now why start that way? Fundamentally, it's just this antagonism toward the idea of categorical superior. I don't like God. I can't stand it. I just can't stand the idea that there's someone there who's in control of everything and who is always going to be greater than me and whom I can never be equal to. That just won't do. If I'm not God, then nobody is. Right? That's the motive. This is called envy. So I said that's a kind of God consciousness. Sometimes it's interesting, especially if you look at works of 19th century thinkers who were European thinkers who were like Nietzsche, they're practically theologians of the absence of God, or the German novelist Franz Kafka. He writes these stories, they're all like legends, or there's stories about the absence of God. I mean, there's big cosmic ache in the middle where God should be, and there's just a void, and everybody's kind of just interesting. In his case, almost a kind of grief, you know, that somehow or other God has disappeared from our view. He is not there anymore. We cannot see him. Of course, they think that in some ways... So anyway, that's the experience, and these people, then they work very, very hard. How can we avoid God, not see God? So actually, that kind of person... many times you see that kind of person whom you meet on the street like that. Sometimes they're the ones that become devotees because they're fighting with Krishna. And
don't want to surrender, but they're thinking all the time. So they can actually, if they meet a devotee, they can become changed like that. At least they care about God. Whereas other people, they may also be atheists, but they're more like animals. They just have animal life, and, you know, they don't think about God one way or the other. They just don't care. But those people that care, sometimes they can become actual devotees of the Lord. So he says, a non-devotee or atheist is also cultivates God consciousness by trying to avoid God in everything. So that's a fact. Actually, in the depth of every living entity, the real thing that's really going on in everyone's life is their relationship with Krishna. And so either they are the real dialogue, the real dynamic that's taking place is what they think about Krishna, what Krishna thinks about them, most people, it doesn't even come to full consciousness. But it's there in dim ways. And so sometimes you see people, they react to Krishna without even knowing what they're doing. One striking instance of that is a number of years ago, we came to do a television show somewhere in Philadelphia, and we had brought some paintings from the temple, and we had mounted them on easels so that the television camera could, at different points when we were talking about Krishna, show some pictures. We had taken paintings. We had one painting. We don't have it anymore. It was Radha and Krishna on a swing. So one of the technicians in the studio, a man in his 50s, looked at this picture of Radha Krishna on the swing and said, "This is a beautiful picture. This is a really nice work of art." And put it up, and I'm going to really, he was one of the guiding the cameras and setting up the lighting so it'd be just perfect. And he went on and on and on about how good the artist was and how well he had rendered the figures and so on, and whether he could get a reproduction of this painting, because he hadn't seen anybody paint something so well. And then after we taped the show, he came up again and he looked at it very closely, and he said, "Look at these brush strokes," and he starts, you know, rubbing Krishna's shoulder and arm, stroking Krishna's arm. And so we could see that actually what he really liked was the subject of the painting, Krishna. But to his mind, that was like a little hard, that was too hard to deal with, so he kept talking as though, you know, it could have been a picture of a rhinoceros. He was just looking at the art, you know, the techniques of the painter. And so that was an example of somebody who was very attracted to Krishna, and was going, and finally when he saw some picture of Krishna, but it was funny how he couldn't really bring it to full consciousness. You know, it was just, he was like a conservative guy in his 50s, and the idea of that, and somehow or other having some fellowship with these people in robes and tilak and shaved heads was more than he could manage. And similarly, sometimes you see people that just hate Krishna automatically, and they don't know why, but they do. Or sometimes that's the way people react to devotees. They're automatically attracted to devotees, or they automatically despise them, just a gut reaction. Immediately, I can't stand it. And it goes deeper than just not liking unconventional people or something like that. It's really about their relationship with Krishna. And a devotee is Krishna's representative. And instinctively, they know these people are representatives of God. and I don't like God and I don't like his people either. So they'll just react that way immediately. But actually the dynamic is always going on deep in everyone's heart. And some people, as it comes more and more to the surface and they become more and more aware of it, then they're becoming more and more Krishna conscious. But some are becoming more and more Krishna conscious in unfavorable ways. So I've actually seen one lady became so envious of Krishna. Her son tried to join the movement for a while, and they stopped that. But her hatred of devotees went far, far beyond just her, you know, concerns about her son doing something she didn't approve of. She actually hated Krishna. She was on big anti. She joined some anti-cult movement and was on some. And when I first met her, her son, he was just a kid, was first coming to the temple, so she came to the temple to check it out and everything like that. And when I first met her, she was a woman in a rage. I mean, she was in a rage about everything. She was just always going on ranting. She's just an angry person, full of anger about everything. And when she finally heard about Krishna, her anger found its real focus. Just like someone who loves Krishna learns how to love everyone, who cares for Krishna learns how to care for everyone and everything. So actually a person who hates Krishna hates everyone and everything. They even hate themselves. They become envious of their own selves. They hate themselves. They hate reality. They hate God. They hate all living beings. So this was her. She was a big hater. And finally, when she discovered Krishna, she found out who she really hated most of all. So this is what's going on. Then she became a big enemy, just like Kamsa was an enemy of Krishna. So she became a big enemy of the Krishna consciousness movement. What can you do? Some people are, that's their platform. They just can't stand it. They can't stand it that there's a God, can't stand that Krishna's God, can't stand that they're devotees. So this is someone like Krishna. He simply couldn't appreciate anything Krishna did. Later on, toward the end of his career, Kamsa, he said, so he's picked up a little rock called Govardhan. So he stepped on a grass snake called Kaliya. So on. He couldn't appreciate anything. He had to put it down. So this is the position. So all these people, they're always unhappy. No matter where they go, what they do, nothing actually makes them happy. Everything they touch, they poison, and therefore they can't enjoy it anyway. By the time it gets to them, they've already contaminated so much. Even simple pleasures of life, so-called, are not even available to them. But for a devotee, Vishvam Purna Sukhayate, the whole world becomes joyful. Everything, Krishna is everywhere, and he loves it. For the others, Krishna is everywhere, they can't take it, can't abide it. Naturally, they're nervous. Any questions? Yeah?
I have two questions. One is that you were saying that this woman was envious of herself. And I've heard that phrase, and I was wondering what exactly that meant, because usually when you're envious of somebody, it's you want something you have.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Just means that people hate themselves. Like sometimes they want to commit suicide, or they want to punish themselves, and so on. So sometimes people deliberately go about doing things and make themselves miserable, and so on. Yeah. If you don't like God, then you don't like yourself. You can't stand that He exists. Ultimately, you can't stand that you exist either. A conflicted position. Complicated. Psychology of a devotee is simple. A devotee should become simple. But sometimes materialistic people get very, very complicated. And this complicatedness derives from having many motives, many trapdoors, disguised ambitions and so on. Wanting contradictory things and trying to put them together. So everything becomes very complex. Devotees should be simple. Materialists think that's bad to be simple. They like things to be complex. They think that's better in some way. They think to be simple and to be simple-minded are the same thing.